Marpet Kufnun Zayin, Mechsheres Avreichim. The Rebbe is talking about the Mida of Tmimas. The person's actions are. The person's actions in his life is being led by the Nefesh, with the Pashtas. According to the Metzius of who he is, and completely uncontrived, and without any sheker. On page Kufin and Zayin, the Rebbe continues in Kol Chinay Shel Hayelid. All of the chayin that a child has, that everybody sees chayin in a child. Kol Chinay Shel Hayelid. Who also who tamim upashit? The chain of the child is because of this tmimus and pashtus that the child has. Kshemadabrim imai magishim ki'ilu enafsho hayinim adabrim. When you speak to the child, you feel. We had started here just a line or two. When you speak with the child, you feel as if you're talking to his nafesh. Not that the child is responding in a way where he's calculating what to say that will make you be impressed or feel or think or respond somehow. The child is speaking. When you speak to the child, it's as if you're speaking to the nefesh of the child. And you ask the child something, the question, it could be the simplest question, but when you ask the child, the question goes to the nefesh of the child. The child receives that, not like, the child's not making a cheshbon, why is he asking me this? What's this guy's angle? What's going on with this person? The child hears a question. And the child receives it with the nefesh, and the child responds with the nefesh. We have many, many adults have many, many guards up. Even when somebody asks you something, you know, just a simple question: how are you doing? So tonight, how come you didn't ask me that last time? You know, and there are all kinds of guards that a person has up. We understand why. That it's not, he doesn't even receive the question with the pashtus. He doesn't, and certainly he processes the question from a place, this all happens in a split second. He processes the question from that place of being defensive and wondering and being suspicious, and then the response has already been calculated and contrived to either please that other person or to deceive the other person or somehow to mislead or whatever it might be. But it's with a cheshbon. But the child is not like that. The child receives the question directly into the nefesh, which you ask him, and it's without processing it in such a way and calculating it in such a way with the seichel, but rather the child answers with the nefesh. And the Rebbe says this is what gives a child that chen, because the ugliness of a person, all that's unappealing, all that's ugly, is from beyond the nefesh. It's from our life of the guf, from this world, and the akumiyus, the crookedness of this world, is what causes everything to become distorted and ugly. But the world of the nefesh, that place of the nefesh, is very, very bechent. It's very beautiful, and a child that responds in such a way, and a child that lives in such a way, with everything with the pashtus and the tmimus. So that gives a chen, because everybody enjoys hearing and seeing the nefesh. That's why Chesheshayil Ma'asadav Hashel Chaderes Ad LaNafshay Umimena Bo LaNachshuva Tmimu Pshuta. And the child answers a simple and Tmimus Dikya answer. That's the child's response is. As called Levi, nice and hubchuvasa, and the entire heart of the child is given into the answer. Not saying that you shouldn't be more intelligent than a child. Of course, an adult matures, and with maturing there comes intelligence and an understanding, of course. And that's a mila that we have as we grow up. We're able to mature in that way. But unmavakshim, so I'm not asking, the Rebbe said, not suggesting that you relinquish your intelligence and that you begin to act like a child. But to be intelligent and to be educated, but to try to achieve the tmimus, to return to the tmimus of a child as much as possible. The marshal, for instance. Lamashal Kesha Yishalcha Adam Dover. When a person asks you something, Laitis Yashiv Ech Lahashivai. Don't try to figure out how to answer the person. The Fi Nimus Ha'olam Yafa Lahashivai Kach. Obviously, that doesn't mean, as I said last week, doesn't mean you can insult the person. You know, not to think about how to word something. A person has to be careful with his words. But careful is not the same thing as calculating. So the Rebbe says, if someone asks you something, like this Yashiv Echel Hashiva Lefin Nimus Ha'olam Yafal Hashiva Kach. But according to the Nimus Ha'olam, according to the what's considered to be the manners or the expectations of the world, that when someone asks you this question, that you make a chesed of how, what is the proper way to answer this. You know, there are complete books on this subject written on ways to respond to questions that people ask you in a way that's according to etiquette, right? The whole subject of etiquette. Which is a good thing when you're dealing with chayis and behemoths, that they should behave in a better way. But the whole inyan of etiquette is that there are books written. I remember seeing such things that when someone asks you this, this is how you should. This is a suggested way of how you should respond to this kind of a question. And when someone asks you that. Well, there's an intelligent way to answer the question of what do you think of the weather? As opposed to say, oh, it's hot. There are better ways to answer the question. And there's a complete literature on this subject of etiquette. So the Rebbe is saying, that in the world, the right way to respond to this question was expected according to the nimusim, the manners of this world and the etiquette of this world, lashiva kach, that I should answer the person in this way. And if I answer according to that expected etiquette, then I will be considered by this individual to be a chacham. And I want to say something that will give the impression that I'm a chacham. I want that person to have to walk away from this conversation with the impression that I'm a chacham. And in order to deceive him and trick him, the best thing to say, the best answer is this. This is what I'll answer in order to deceive him, in order to trick him. What happens is that he says that the answer that you give this person is actually a likut. You know, like you have a sefer that it was not that's not written by the mechaber, but it's the mechaber. He claims to have written it. There are many modern nowadays. There are many sefer like this. I've had on a number of occasions that I look at a sefer. And the mechaber, there's some mechaber, not a ghostwriter, but he's writing. I'm not talking about a ghostwriter. A guy writes a sefer, and there's a sefer that this happened a few years ago, and it looked like an interesting sefer, and I brought the sefer home. And I'm looking at the sefer, and it starts after a page or two. It sounds familiar to me, and I'm thinking, and then I pull down another sefer. This is a sefer that was written like 70 years ago, an old sefer, and this guy now from Yerushalayim copied every single word from the sefer. It's just the sefer that's out of print, and it's very copied word for word, the whole sefer, word for word, under his name, word for word. And then there was a big problem. This is a very well-known thing. I don't know if any of you ever heard of Rabbi Tzal Zsolti. You heard of Rabbi Tzal Zsolti? No, he was the Rav of Yerushalayim. He was a Yid, a Goyin. He wrote a sefer called Mishnas Yaivis. Mishnas Yaivis is a Gevaldige sefer in Lomdus. It's a Lomdus sefer, 3 volumes. It was out of print for whatever reason. It was out of print for over 30 years. It's the most delicious Lomdus, the Mishnas Yaivis. So, I myself saw 3 svarim that copied chapters and chapters of Mishnas Yaivis. I was never thinking that it would be back into print. From contemporary Mechabim. And one of the Mechabim, I happen to know personally. And he has like a 40-page piece on a certain Indian that's all taken from the Mishnas Yaivis. And then they put out the Mishnas Yaivis. They reprinted the Mishnas Yaivis. So that's plagiarism. That's plagiarism. Say that. So then you have... So what you have in a situation like that is when the person is not saying is not really saying anything of his own, he's just being malakit. Everything that he's writing in the sefer is a likud, is really gathering from the four corners. In this case, he didn't even bother to go to the four corners of the earth. He just went to one sefer on the shelf, and he copied it and he took it under his name. But in a much less extreme situation where we're not dealing with plagiarism, but we're dealing with a situation where a person has completely abandoned any creativity in his own way of thinking or speaking. He's not creative at all. In other words, whatever he says is not what he really thinks. It's just a leakage from other places. I'm not talking about plagiarism. I'm not talking about a guy that's writing a book and is trying to, you know, make a name for himself. That's stealing. We're not talking about stealing and plagiarism. We're talking about somebody who receives ideas, concepts from everywhere, and not because he's trying to intentionally trick people, but he's lost the capacity for creativity. He never ever says what he thinks. Even his opinions about politics or things like this are only the opinions that he's heard by people who he thinks are smarter than him, or he's read in other places. And even though he'll always begin the paragraph by saying, "Well, I personally think," it's never true, because he hasn't thought since he's around 6 years old. He's smart, and he quotes, and he's a good malakit. He gathers. And he might edit a little bit, and he might not be plagiarizing, but he hasn't actually worked something out and worked it through since the time that he's a little kid. In other words, that it should be his own. That it should be his own feeling or his own thought. And people could hide behind all kinds of things. You know, how many times... You'll be by a shavar brachas, you know, when everybody has to speak, or you'll be by lo aleinu levaya, have to speak. So I think I might have mentioned this last time. When it comes to lo aleinu by a levaya, so you'll have, which is the worst time to have to speak, you know, by levaya. Nobody wants this to be levayas, and then once there's a levaya, it's so uncomfortable. And then especially if you didn't know the person, right? You didn't know the person. This is the thing that I dread most about what I have to do in this world. This whole Indian, and my wife will tell you how this is something which literally sickens me. I get physically ill when it comes to these things. So, you know, they ask you this, they say something about Leviathan. So I didn't know the person. It doesn't make a difference. It's just, you know, we'll tell you about the person to say something. So it's a likud of what other people, of other people's impressions, right? It's a likud. So so you hear about this person, and so, oh, the person was very generous, so then you say, okay, so then I'll say, you know, some Torah or something about generosity and whatever. Try to emphasize in the Hesped that the person was a generous person, and that meed of generosity we see from the Torah is a nice meed. And you try to say some pasuk, a chazal, a story that's a nice thing. The person was generous. Generosity is something which the Torah admires, and here's your Hesped, and let's get to the cemetery and get it over with, you know. But
that's commercial.
Yeah, but everybody's, and then you sit by a levine, you see them, then. So I know that I'm conscious of that, and I dread it, and I always ask, can I just say some tillum, you know, if you want, I know you want to be mechabed me, it's very nice, you know, it's not like, you know, being under the chuppah, and a meichel on, you know, the whole thing, and so then to say something, you know, if I know the person, and I could share something, then I'm fine, but if I didn't know the person, okay, you ask, and, The person that lost somebody is asking you, you know, it's Rahman. So, yeah. But then that's one level. Then you have another level. You get rabbis that get up and they start saying drushes. You've been to levies like that where you could sit at the summit and someone saying like a 20-minute, half hour. I've been to someone says a 45-minute drusha, like putting together something like to dazzle the oilam, like some drusha. And like the Avelim is sitting there, and someone's getting up, and he's dashing, and the mace is sitting over there. And the mace, it could be the mace died from too many drushes. And on top of that, he's got a live in, and nacha drusha, you know. And the rabbi's putting together this gemara, that gemara, this pusik, and that pusik, and every now and then he gives a krech. So, yeah. It's a violent mistreatment of the availment of the mace. Then what happens like this? Then they say now the grandson will say a few words, and then or the child, the son, and then everybody sits forward on the chair, and the son starts to say, my father was, you know, the grandson says something about, and then the island hears this, and it penetrates into the bones of who the person was, and you feel like moved by it, and you feel that it's chaval. I didn't know that person. Wow. And when you go home, you don't remember a word of the drasha, even if it was like really good. You don't remember a word of how he made the psukim work, you know, out in such a nice way. You don't remember that. But you walk home and you tell your wife, you know, the Nifta's kid said such beautiful things about him. I was so touched by, you know, how his father did this, or the grandfather, or the grandmother, you know. It's the pashtus and the yashus of someone who's not a speaker, who never would get up in front of people, who doesn't come with all kinds of tzatlach. I mean, you have sometimes the saddest things when you have with the kid. Someone tells the kid has some idea that he should say a drasha. And everybody's thinking, just tell us about your dad, you know. Tell us about your father, why you loved him, or, you know, what some things, some stories that you remember about your father, about your mother. Tell us a story you remember about your mom. And everybody sits and hears that in a very real way and gets very moved by it. And they hear things that a father, a mother, stories, a grandparent. Why? Because the pashtus and the yashus. Not that all of us like to hear. It's always good to hear good Torah. Who doesn't like to hear it? It's a good Torah. Talmud Chacham says some drush. It's good Torah. Everybody enjoys Torah. But it's not the time. Because when someone dies, you don't want it. You don't want chesbainus when someone dies. No, you understand what I'm saying? You don't want. You just want tmimus. Death is very, very. Poshut. There's nothing that's more pasha than that. It's not like the guy could all of a sudden open his eyes up by the husband and say, I'm not as dead as you think. It's not the way that it looks. That's it. He's dead. And the dead is, and the death is with the pashtas and with the yashas. That's what it is. There's nothing that's as pashut and as yasha as death. Nothing. Maybe the first shri that the baby gives when he's born, that's also the pashtas and the yashas. But the last shri, and that last breath, and the person's leaving the world, it's very, very clear, and it's to the point. And when people are at Elavaya, it should be with the pashas and the ashes. if it's an Adam Gadol that passed away, and they want to talk about his learning and his Torah, maybe it's different, but the ikur is pashtas and yashus. Because the child, when he gets up and says a hesped, or the grandchild, the last thing in the world that that person is thinking about is that the olim here should think that I'm smart. It's the last thing he's thinking about, that the olim should think that he's smart. He's distraught over the loss of somebody he loves, and he couldn't care less about making an impression. He's not trying to make any impression. He's not trying to get people to think that he's smart. He's just who he is. He's just a grandson. Or a daughter. Daughters shouldn't talk at Levi's. Girls, women shouldn't talk at Levi's. That's an IMAS. I'm not going to talk about it now. But it's just a son or a grandson talking about a mother, a grandmother, a grandfather, father. That's what the pashtas and the yashas. I'm not trying to get you to think this way about anything. I'm just saying what I feel. So that's an example where you see the difference between someone who's just gathering things, you know, and that's the worst thing, because then I have to speak at the Levaya, so then they said, please speak as a sign. I said, are you sure? Maybe somebody else. No, the oldest, there's nobody else. He said, so then I'll go over and I'll write down, like, tell me, you know, some things about your father, some things about your mother, and to be malakit, you know, from other places, but not to say something that's your own. It could be very, very simple, so leaving the Levaya and other things. When it comes, let's say, when it comes to a Shever Brachas or something, and you know, so a lot of times I'll get Chevra, they'll call and say, you know, like, say, Rebbe, it's a big, you know, I have to speak at my niece's Shever Brachas tomorrow. Could you help me out? So anybody that's done that, there are one or two of you that are here, and I don't mean it as an insult, you know. It's chaval to do that, but I understand where it's coming from. You know, you're afraid you're going to get up and look like a dummy or something, and you don't know. It's like all of a sudden it happened, even though you knew this was going to happen for a couple of months. There's a Shabbat brachas, and you know that you knew that they're going to ask you to say something. You know, but okay, it's last minute help. So in other words, well, I'm afraid, you know, to get up and to say something. And so I always will ask. Well, is there something that you'd like to say, and that you have thought, things that you know that you have on your mind about your niece and about the chasm, about the family, and if you share that with me, I understand you want me to like dress up with a couple of like a chazal or a vart or something, and you know I could help you with that, but just don't say to me, I need a dvar Torah quick. I'm not going to do that, because that's an insult to you, and it's an insult to the Baal HaSimcha. Tell me what your thoughts are and your feelings about the Simcha and what you have in your mind, and maybe, you know, I'll tell you Kedushas Levi's like this or something, so you know it won't look like you're just standing over there, you know, whatever. You could say something of that and end like, you know, Amen, instead of saying something you can't say Amen to. You gotta have something that everybody should be able to say Amen. So that's okay, but when someone just says, give me something of your own for my niece's Shever Brachas, what are you, it's not my niece's Shever Brachas, it's your niece's Shever Brachas. So what do you have to say about your niece? Or had somebody comes and this just happened very, very recently last week, they're making a bar mitzvah next year, comes with a yellow legal pen and a pen, could you, I'd like to have a Dvar Torah for my son's bar mitzvah. So I said, well, I don't know your kid. Why don't you, you know, tell me. What do you have in your mind? What are you talking about? What do you want to say? What do you say? I don't know. That's why I'm coming to you. I don't know what to say. You have nothing to say. You raised the kid for all those years. You know, something. I must have something. I'm not saying you should give me a Dvar Torah. I can help you with the Torah part. I can help you with some Torah. But this something that's you. Something that's you. Something that's you. And you know what? That's all anybody's waiting for that's sitting in the crowd and listening. They're just waiting to hear you. Again, everybody likes Torah. Who doesn't like a Dvar Torah? As long as it's not out of place, out of time, you know, long and complicated, and it's also a separate thing, you know, by Simcha, people start with that. But everybody just wants to hear what you have to say in a very pushed way, without you trying to razzle-dazzle anybody. Just say something about your niece. It's simple. That's to the point. That's what everybody wants to hear. And if they when they walk away from a Simcha, from a Sheva Brachas or something like that, and you said, and you got up there for 3 minutes, and just shared a little bit about some memories that you have, and about, and give a bracha that you have. That I'm giving you an Eitzah Taiva that really it's a good Eitzah. But people will remember that, and they'll feel good, and they'll appreciate it. You don't have to get up and start you know, to give the impression that you know that you're the Dubna Magid or something, and that everybody should go home and say you wouldn't believe what this guy said. Wow, that was a knockout for Trasher. It's a simcha, but he just wants to get to the next course, you know. They want to hear some nice words because they're happy to be there and they love your niece and everybody's happy. So make this, say something, 5 minutes, pashtis and yashis again, without anything like what they should think about you. It's not you, you're not the chasn or the kallah. What is the difference what they think about you? What's the difference? Just to say something that the Olam should feel good about the Simcha, and should feel happy and enjoy the next course instead of being so sick that they have to, you know, that they can't continue with the meal from what you just put them through. You know? And from there comes all these long, long, lengthy discourses. You know, smart people will... Well, it comes like these dinners. Right now, they have the things they put out. It's a big tikkun that they made. That the ma'aser will film the people. That's a big tikkun. That they'll film the person, so they could already the guy is already dashing it in his house and his couch next to his wife. But then they come to the laboratory. They could already, you know, they could do a job on it. And the guy's sitting there. He's all excited because the whole island's going to hear his 40-minute. And when they put on the thing, he says, "Oh, I really love the Moshed, and everybody should contribute to it." And then they cut everything else out. And the guy goes, "Yeah, turns around, what happened? Like, what happened?" He doesn't know. Like, what about my? What about, you know? I spoke about the Mishkan. What about my talk about the Mishkan? Like, you know, that this yeshiva was like a Mishkan. What about that whole talk? And then, just it's a great Moshed. Try to help. I spoke for 40 minutes in my house, and with the cameras and the lights, and my big shot, like at stardom. There's going to be a dinner, and there's going to be 700 people at dinner, and they got me up there on the film. You know what a tikkun gadol this was? When this happened, in general, you know that I'm not a big fan of modern technology, but this was a big tikkun. This saves the island. Because you used to have people. You have people that they can get up there. And they start saying Divrei Torah, like whatever they read in this book or that. They're looking in the newspapers and books. And again, they ask somebody and they get up there and they start and you're trapped. I remember I was at a dinner that was on a boat. I had to go. It was on a boat. So I remember I said to my wife, this is really bad. Because I know that I try, like, you know, you could sneak out. There are things you could do. I said, but this is really bad. We're sitting like in the harbor, and there's nowhere to go. But I said to my wife, I'm ready to jump. I said, I think I can jump. Because going on a drusha for somebody was dashing there, the guest of honor was dashing for almost an hour. And I said to my wife, I'm going to jump. Man overboard. Said, yeah, get the lifeboat. Just get out of here. And then Then we were at another dinner, it had a whole bunch of chaver from the shul there, because somebody was being honored. But it wasn't our guy, there was some other, there were like also like seven guests of honor, you know. And so there was a guest of honor, Ustav Tadarshan. This was the pre-movie day. So the guy's dashed, and one of the guys from the shul, he's all sitting around, one of the guys from the shul says to me, he leans over and says, I see the guy from the shul starts putting away all the knives. He starts getting this, he's dead, but he gave me that. So what's going on? So he says to me, there's a suicide watch right now at the table. Because like everybody just wants to end up, they can't take anymore. Everybody just wants to, you know, it's too much. We can't take it. Listen, I'm joking. I know that I've caused people to myself with my drugs just to be on suicide watch. And I talk too long. And I'm making fun of other people, but I'm the main culprit of this stuff, you know. But when a person gets up at one of these dinners, or when it wasn't with a movie, when it was like, a person gets up and says in the most pashut way, I appreciate what you do for Klal Yisrael, and Hashem should give you kaiches to continue. You're good people, and I appreciate what you do. Then you hear a lot, sometimes people say, Mama, it's not the clock, right? Not just because they got off the hook from that drasha that could have been, and they're like relieved, because they knew that this could have been really bad. It turned out good. But they enjoyed it. Because it was like, it was with the Hashtas. And it was Emes, it was Yashus. And it wasn't that the guy's trying to say something so that we should think that he's something. He was speaking for the Moshe. And everybody remembers that. They walk away and they remember that. What the person said. So he says, although a person, he says, think about how many times when you're answering, that I'll be saying, when you answer a question, you're not answering what you think or how you feel. I'm not talking about Father, if you feel something negative, you don't have to, the halach is about how hurting a person or insulting the Lashon Hara. Of course you can't say, you have to make a chesed of what you're saying. But when it's not that kind of a question, so how many times you answer is not really what you think or what you feel, it's just a likud. It's just what other people think or feel, or what you think that you should say under these circumstances. Because you know that according to the expectations of the world, that there's a way that you should answer. That you should answer the following way. That's what the Velt expects of you. Or that everybody should think that you're a chacham. That you should answer, don't answer this way, answer another way, and so whole cheshbon. Children don't have that cheshbon of what will the impression be. V'ate im nafshecha chaseir, ein kan lemetzius. If your answer, since it's not with your nefesh, ein kan lemetzius, there's no metzius in your answer. It could be the smartest thing in the world. It could be that you just quoted like, you know, all these different statistics and said all these fancy things, but there's no metzias to it, because it's not the nefesh. And the true metzias of the world is the nefesh of the world. There's no metzias. There's no chias. There's no life to it. There's no sincerity to what you're saying. Like nefesh, like emes. It's not true. Again, the statistics might be true, but it's not emes, because it's not something that is it's not something that represents you and who you are and what you feel. Like sheker efes avayu b'cha, it's just the lie, the emptiness, the tov avo, the efes and avo inside of you that's coming out in words. That's all. Reishis kol. So the Rebbe says, so yes, so how should we answer? So he says, Reishis kol. Tan the beritzinus, ernst. Sincerity. We had seen this sincerely and seriously. A person asks you something. So tan the beritzinus, ernst. Kashe im levav habetmimus upashtus. As is in your heart, betmimus upashtus. Again, just I'm not, the Rebbe is not suggesting you tell the person betmimus upashtus, like bug off. I'm not interested in talking to you, because there are halachas, and a person has to be careful, obviously, not to hurt somebody else. So, not talking about that kind of situation. And pashas and tamimus, And what about Yisrael? So where does Yisrael fit into all of this? So he says, can I make it a little bit warmer in here? I don't know, maybe, I know, lightly. I just feel like my blood pressure is going down or something. I know it's going to get warm later on, but it's not that. Yeah. Shkarech. Uvesichlecha tishamesh rak lahavchim im eincha toye b'tshuva zu. And use your seichel. What's the seichel? Where does the seichel come in here? The seichel you have to use, of course, very much. You have to use the seichel. Rak lahavchim im eincha toye b'tshuva zu. You have to use your seichel to make sure you're not making a mistake in what you say. That you have to use the seichel. So even by lo aleinu by the hesped, you have to always be on guard not to make a mistake. So, or by the seven bucks, not to say something that's not true, or to say something that's unclear. You have to use your seichel. There shouldn't be a mistake. There shouldn't be a toast. You shouldn't mislead people. You get somebody who's supposed to say something that nobody understands. It's not clear. You have to use the seichel that you should be clear, and the seichel that it should be that should be accurate. Of course, you have to use the seichel. Naturally, once you use the seichel, it could start to, the seichel could stretch itself over the whole thing, and then it becomes crooked. But the Ikri says is ernst with sincerely with the heart, tamimus pasha, and the seichel is lahachnam encha toy b'tshuvazim. So the seichel is that you shouldn't be making a mistake in your answer. Aval gam seichel chazeh ye pasha deritzini. Gam sichel chazer ye poshet uritzini. Even the seichel that you're using should be poshet uritzini. You ever take a speech class in college? You ever take the high school and college speech? So the whole limud there is how everything should be, not like what the Rebbe is saying, right? Or if it's not, then they'll just tell you if you want, maybe be a better speech if you make believe that you're sincere. Right, the whole thing about speech. My daughter came home. She had a speech class. She had a speech thing in high school. It was a teacher's teaching speech that they had to take. And the teacher was telling him how at certain times during the talk you should look a little bit like this, like you should look like reflective. I don't know, like give. Some, I wasn't sure exactly, but she tried to show me what the teacher was saying. You look like a certain way, off into the I don't know, like off into the distance. And teacher said you should do that. Two or three times during the talk, you should stop and go like that. So my daughter just said, like, you know, I never say you do that, Daddy. Like, stand back and, you know, you speak a lot, like stand back and, like what the teacher said to do. So she's very pushed, and she said, you know, my father speaks a lot, but I don't think he doesn't do that. So something that maybe my father doesn't know how to speak, but I think he does. But you said there's like a din like that, that you have to go like that. And so I don't know. You know. So the teacher says, I'm like, no, you know, I know your father's whatever, he speaks, it's fine. But I'm just giving, you know, a suggestion that it can make it more effective. You don't have to do that. But she said the right answer. But the whole limud is a funny limud. The whole limud is a funny limud. Right? The whole thing of teaching somebody to make speeches, even though, of course, there's a big chachmah to that, but if someone doesn't have a natural koyach to do that, it's usually a big bracha levatola, kiyadur. And when the person's speaking, public speaking, is always contrived, meaning cheshbainus, and coming off of his speech class or imitating somebody else's speech, so then that's usually not very effective. And the most effective thing is when the person says what he thinks. You know, what he thinks. He says what he thinks, and he has his own way of saying it, and his own stamp of his own personality and who he is on what he's saying. Of course, but you have to think not to make a mistake. And you have to be careful that it should be clear. Right? What's your seichel's role in all of this? And the Rebbe's not talking about public speaking. He's talking about talking to somebody. He says the seichel should act as a kli shimush, as a way to the seichel is to be mishamesh l'shamesh es pashas etmimus libcha. The seichel is only there to serve your heart and the pashas of your heart. The seichel is there to make it accurate and to cut it down to the right size that it shouldn't go on, and to the seichel is only a shamish of the heart, not the other way. The other way is you want to make everybody think you're smart and you want to come across as a big seichel, so you try, you put in something from your heart to be mishamish the seichel, like something, you know, that's like sounds moving or genuine or something, to be mishamish your seichel. But that, even that, is only a cheshbon. It's only a cheshbon. It's the opposite way. That means it should be the heart that's speaking, and it should be with Ernstkeit and Tmimus and Yashus. And the seichel is just a shamish on how to get that across, not the other way. Yisichel chalashamish, it's like a kli shimush. Yisichel chalashamish is pashtus atmimus libcha lazala alaytzi lepoil, to help express the feelings of your heart. You need the seichel to help express the feelings that you have, or the passions that's inside of you, that those feelings should come out in a way that's accurate and understandable. Accurate and understandable. So the seichel is a shamash of the heart, not the other way. Not that the heart is a shamash of the seichel. The seichel is a shamash of the heart. So even the person, even the son or the grandson that's going to get up and have to talk Lolena by a levaya, of course he has to arrange his thoughts. He can't get up and start blabbering. There should be a seichel. But the seichel is only that it should be clear and true. Not to create with the seichel. Not to create with the seichel, but the seichel should edit and clarify. But it should be a product of the heart. Because the seichel is meshamish the heart. And they're saying that's how people should be with each other, how they should talk. Always with seichel and with heart, but the seichel is the shamas of the heart, not that the heart is the shamas of the seichel. And we could think about that and catch ourselves how we talk and the way that we're talking to friends and to people. Now, if your heart comes to the conclusion that if you realize that you have a feeling of what to say, and you check this with the seichel, and you realize that if you respond the way that you feel like responding, tazik lecha, it could make a problem. Or many acheres b'tshuvascha. Or there's another reason why, you know, the danger signal goes up. You better not say this. Tana any yodea. And the best thing is to say, I don't know. Not to come up with a new Torah from Sinai, you know, to come down with new luchos. You know what I'm saying? Let's just say, any yodea. Chaisnish. I don't know. In other words, you do know.
It's not true.
But you can't hurt and insult. And you also, for you to answer in a way that's going to cause you a problem, or cause that person a problem, or there's another reason why you wouldn't answer now, because it might not be the right time. If the person's asking you something, whatever, it might not be the right time. So then the best thing to say is any day. I don't know. Lama l'shem shalom, any day. Chazal say, teach yourself to say the words any day. Any day. When's the last time can you imagine a politician saying, I don't know? Like they ask a politician something and they say, I don't know. Never, I don't think there is such a thing. In Mitzvahs, to say, I don't know. Lama l'shem shalom, any day. To be able to say any day. Don't try to make some kind of crooked, perverted response, some twisted answer without heart and without any tmimus. Just say any day. I don't know. Well, you can say it in a nice way. You know, I'm not sure. I don't know. You could add a little bit, a sentence or two, just so, like, otherwise it might be too abrupt. You know. But not to get yourself into that discussion because it's not good for you to have that discussion. It's better for you not to have that discussion because what you say might not be what that person might not make that person feel good, and it might be something that could come back to you in a way that's not good. But, any of that, I don't know. Huh?
You should say someone like corners you and like, what do you think about this and this, and really, and I mean, and this is, they don't let you say I don't know because they know you know more. They know that you have an opinion. So are you supposed to say just something positive? Because as long as positive is going to be accomplished, it's better.
Sometimes you have to just try to say something nice and positive, because instead of saying I don't know, really you're saying I don't know, or are you saying I don't want to talk about it? Not I don't know, but
right.
You're really saying I don't want to talk about it. But you say it a little bit.
Won't accomplish anything positive, like if the answer that they want to hear the truth. So better, and but they're cornering you. You can't say I don't know because in the situation that they speak to you about, they know you have an opinion.
Right.
Is it better to say
You say something to make the person feel good without really answering the question. Because answering the question is not going to be a good thing. So you say something to make the person feel good, or you could say, you know, maybe we'll talk about some other time. That's not
very complicated.
Yeah, I don't feel so good right now. So that, I don't feel like that. You make something, to get out of it. Because if you know that the answer is an answer that's going to not be a good thing or something that they don't want to hear, so then...
It's a
question. Yeah. So then you get out of it. You get out of it. Yeah.
You have to think about it.
That's a good one. People don't like that. If you tell them, I need time to think about it.
One answer is right away.
Yeah. I need time to think.
Yeah.
I need time to. It's something I should think. I should think more about. Because then usually then they go out to somebody else or something. And you say, I need time to think about it. But it's an uncomfortable thing. There's no klolim about how to deal with these situations. But certainly not to hurt or to insult or to make a person feel bad. It has to be. So there is a seichel that you have to use. But in this case, the seichel is the Rasman Hashem that you use your seichel not to make a person feel bad. And not to get into the thing that could go the wrong direction. This conversation is going the wrong direction, so it has to be with seichel.
Like Rabbi said, Aaron Akon used to say things that were
You see, Aaron Akon might say things. Aaron Akon used to say things like that. They were not honest. They were not straight. But it was to accomplish that. He had to use his seichel to accomplish that. To get people off of that bit, out of that bad place, to get them into a better place. You say. You make a cheshem of how you can get this into a better place. That certainly use the seichel in such a way, but you don't get really to the inyan, because the inyan is something you shouldn't be talking about. But a person could learn how to say these. To learn how to say so. What Moshe Dabbit is, you're right. You know, it's not just to say the words any a day. I don't know, but to have different ways of saying any a day. But it comes down to any a day. It comes down to not talking about this any. But there are different ways to not talk about something. Yeshnam Anoshim, there are some people. Shahar at the bottom of the page. Yeshnam Anoshim Shahar Mimus Lahem Beteva. There are people who crookedness and deceit has become their nature. It's their teva, it's their nature. Shemitivam noitim lo. I mean, obviously that wasn't when they were little kids, but they learned over the years, for whatever reason, how come that happened, but they became like that. Even before they went to law school. Before law school. Just that's a joke. I had to put it some point in this conversation. Just put it in some point. Just a joke. So, yes, I'm not from Shire. Me, Muslim, but tell them that crookedness became a tev, became nature.
Is it still from the bitterness of your parents wanting you to become a?
Yeah, it still comes from there. Yeah. Shire, me, Muslim, but tell them. Shemitivam noitim lo, to have a natural natia to this kind of crookedness, to to being to deceitfulness. For these people, it obviously requires much, much more avaida. There's a lot more avaida. To get themselves out of that crookedness and to bring themselves to a place of ritzinus, of sincerity and pashtus. I will not show my head next page. But there are very few yidden like this. Right? The Rebbe has a nice way of, and this is the way he thought and this is the way he saw things. Well, he says that the nature of a Jewish person is really yashuus, and it's good. The true nature is there's a yashuus, there's a afkadosha, and there's a holiness. I'm going to say something now. I hope it doesn't sound in any way like it's a racist comment. When I say that, I hope it doesn't sound that way, because I don't mean it that way, so don't hear it that way. But there was always a hanav that I had over the years of when talking with black people. You're not allowed to be mitered into such a thing as people have different colors, but we know that there are people that have different colors. So the hanav that I had with always over the years with, because there's a, I'm not talking about the ones that are like with knives and guns, you know what I'm saying? There's a few, and they get a lot of publicity. But I'm talking about the average black person that I, like in the yeshiva, like the guy that was the working in the yeshiva, was stam, like in life. I always found a pashtus and a yashus that I didn't find by the average white person. You hear this at all? Does this sound crazy? Am I the only person that has this impression? I don't know. I always felt like a certain pashtus that was to me so endearing when I talked there. I very rarely have any interaction because I'm with you all the time. but I'm saying, but when I have these pushing the things like just stop me at some place and there's a friendly guy, you start talking and you talk to him. It's without the usual Western white. What do you think about me? It's just like a
pashtus.
No. I thought about that a lot. But you know, it's not just a lack. It's not a lack of education. No, because I see even by ones that are more educated. No, I saw pashtus. There's a certain pashtus, and a pashtus. I get it. It's an impression that I have. I don't know why this is. I just had, and so you could say it, because they don't know any, a person that is never educated. You have some that's not whatever they're for. They're not educated. No, I'm not talking about saying it was without, because it doesn't, even if you didn't take, you know, physics, you know, college, you could still be a person you could see this by someone that's not educated, but he's still fakrumt. They're still trying to come across a certain way. I didn't see that usually by the blacks. But I grew up, and the people that I knew, or that I would meet, because again, I didn't have much to do with how I was raised. But just like this, over the years, I always felt comfortable that the person was talking from a place of pashtus and yashus. I always felt that. I mean, I'd say 99% of the conversations were like this, with a pashtus and a yashus, where you could answer and you could talk in a way that's very pashtus and very yashus without playing the games. So to say a terrorist that they're not intelligent, that's not a racist. They're not intelligent. Not educated, you could say, because a lot of them, they're not educated. Many of them are not educated because of where they're coming from, whatever. That's not, there's nothing racist about it. But it wasn't an issue of intelligence. Because other rabbi, I found tremendous intelligence. I found people who were just life intelligent. Street smart, life intelligent, but very refreshing in a certain pashtus and yashus and kind of these little conversations over the years. And I don't know how it would be like if you were the guy for 2 hours. I don't know. I never spent more than 15 minutes with anybody like that. But I enjoyed always the pashtus and the yashus. Shem, I'm sorry.
That's not something that I've like really been thinking about, but just, you know, like just my pashtus response to that is that I think it's more, not so much education, but maybe just
a lack of a desire to integrate and exposure to Western culture, because even the ones that are more educated and sophisticated, they sort of have their own culture and their own society, and their own culture is more from Apashtus, all the way, you know, from Eved, all the way just to even the wealthy ones. We don't care about Western society. We could do all of our rap and street stuff because that's just who we are. And so I just don't think they have that desire to show themselves, you know, like Chazar Fissel, as they say.
That's definitely part of it. That's definitely part of it. There's that lack of interest in acting clever. There's not an interest in acting clever. And maybe a little bit comes from a certain shyness or a feeling of a lack of confidence. A lack of confidence, for whatever reason, could be that the guy's being bashed for his entire life by different people. But a lack of confidence that makes what they say so endearing. I just find it very endearing. And like 5 or 6 summers ago, my wife, we went to one of these little shtetlach up in the, we like to take drives, and you have these little shtetlach where you can, it's just 2.5 hours away from here, but it's like someplace that's, you know, really, really, some little village. And they have this, they have every year, they have this book sale. I don't know if they have it, but they have this, like, used book sale in one of the shtetlach, but a really fun, a faraway place. And we were driving through and we stopped over there. And my wife picked up the, you know, they have like 50 cents. The prices, they haven't even caught on, like, you know. So it's like 50 cents, 25 cents. It's like from the older. And my wife got this book. It was written by these two black sisters called the Delaney sisters. I remember the name is Delaney. And my wife was so misspelled from this book. She read me a lot of parts. It was like the wisdom of these two sisters that they never married, these two black sisters. And I found it to be unbelievably enlightening, the book. I didn't read it, and so my wife told me a lot of different parts of it, and it was beautiful, because it was written, it came straight from here onto the paper, and I don't know if there was any editing, but it was clear that this is stuff, that there was just like things in life and such straight, normal, healthy thinking. So I even named, there's a part, you know, these names that I had to give for tapes, silly names, I don't even know what they mean, I don't know what the tape is, but there was a series that I spoke about Simcha years ago and I called it A Slice of Heaven. And that came from that book, because it was that summer that I gave those shiurim about Simcha, and my wife read to me that one of the sisters, when she was young, you know, she was pretty, and she was walking down the, they lived in the south someplace, and they're walking, and there was another black one of the chever, a guy that said, came, whistled at her and said you're a slice of heaven. A slice of heaven. It's an interesting lesson. So she said, yeah, but I ain't your slice of heaven. I am, but I ain't your slice of heaven. I said, it's such a beautiful lush. No, it is. It's a beautiful lush. Pashtus, yeah, but I ain't your slice of heaven. It's a pashtus, a sweetness that I find so endearing.
I think we're just laughing at the twang.
Huh?
That's the twang, the method of speech, not necessarily what they say.
No, I think the Teuchen is beautiful. Not just the Teuchen. The Teuchen. The Teuchen is... You're embarrassed, you're having a hard time with this. Yeah. It's only one person's impressions. I look, you know. I'm saying that this is
it's based on the
involvement
that you've had.
Yeah, that's which is very, very limited, right? Very limited. Just the hergish that I've had over the years.
I deal with truckers all day, maybe, so.
Okay. Okay. I guess that's not.
They're
not, you know,
the ones with the guns and the knives.
Yeah, I said that. I understand that there's a certain habit, but I'm talking about. There's a pashtus and the ashes. That at least this is my experience, just in the hamayim that I, for whatever reason, that I've encountered in life, and again, if there is something, you know, with the seichel, it's mishal. What the Rebbe is saying here is that the teva of an ish Yisraeli is yishar teva af kedosha. That the teva of a yid, he says, is really a pashtus. The teva of a Jew is a yashus and a pashtus and a tmimus. That doesn't even not. It says in the pasuk, "Am chalcha v'novan." They were very smart people. Jews are the smartest people. But what the Rebbe is saying is that the seichel is always to be mishamish, the tmimus and the pashtus. That's the nature of a Jew. But there are people, which we're going to talk about next week, there are people who have lost that teva, and that they slipped into a second teva, which is the teva of crookedness. So we'll continue that next week.